I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. I'm very excited to have a friend of mine on the show. Her name is Emily Jungmin Yoon, and she is a poet. I first met her at an AWP conference through a mutual friend, another writer, in Seattle years ago. And after that, I kept hearing about her everywhere. I'd read her poet on poets.org and just about everywhere. She's a fantastic poet, and she just came out with her first book. It's called A Cruelty Special to Our Species, and they are beautiful, often heartbreaking poems, many of them about the Korean comfort women of World War II. She's going to talk about her poetry, her process, and whatever else comes up in the conversation. So stick around, and we'll talk to Emily Yoon. Emily Jungmin Yoon is the author of Ordinary Misfortunes from Tupelo Press in 2017, winner of the Sunken Garden Chapbook Prize. Her first full-length collection, however, is what we're going to talk about today. It's A Cruelty to Our Species, and it was published last year, 2018. She was born in Korea and earned her BA in English and Communication at the University of Pennsylvania and her MFA in Creative Writing at NYU, where she served as an award editor for the Washington Square Review. Her poems have appeared in The New Yorker, in Poetry Magazine, Columbia Journal Online, Pinwheel, and many, many others. She is currently working on her PhD in Korean literature at the University of Chicago. Emily, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on this beautiful book. You know, when I was thinking about, you know, some of the questions that I would ask you about this book, I've been spending the last couple of weeks just going inside of these poems, and I thought, you know what would be a good way of describing this book? Horrible. It's a horrible book. but of course, it is about a horrible subject. Can you tell us, horrible but beautiful, horribly beautiful, I guess you could say. Can you tell us how this book came about? And just so we get the listeners to kind of know what the subject is that we're dealing with here.
Right. So a lot of the poems in this book are about the history of the comfort women, which is a euphemistic term for the sex slaves of the Japanese Empire.
Right.
And I had always known about their history because it is very much in the Korean collective consciousness, since it's still an unresolved issue.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the former comfort women are still alive. Not many of them are alive today because they're very old. I think the average age is over 90.
Wow.
But yeah, so they are still fighting for reparations and the recognition of their history, you know, from the Japanese government. And their demands haven't been met yet.
And that's what you mean by unresolved.
Well, so they haven't, a lot of the textbooks or the officials in Japan kind of deny that it has happened.
Wow.
Or they haven't really granted, you know, reparations and sort of, so they haven't given the women what they asked for, which is that, you know, basically that they be repaid for what they went through. So actually there was an agreement in 2011, I believe, which is sort of the subject of my poem Notes in the book. But that was between the two governments.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, it was in 2015. I don't know why I said 2011.
And
but there was an agreement.
Between Japan and Korea.
Mm-hmm. Well, South Korea.
South Korea,
Right, because there are some former comfort women in North Korea, of course, that
right.
we don't have a lot of information on.
Right.
But in 2015, the South Korean and Japanese governments had an agreement, and basically it was that Japanese government will pay a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the elements of the agreement was that this issue will not be spoken of in this way anymore, basically that the issue is resolved.
Oh, wow.
Right, but the former comfort women were, of course, not happy with this because they were not consulted in this agreement, even though they are the victims. And, you know, they protested this, and one of the former comfort women said, why are you trying to kill us twice?
Wow.
And why did you exclude us? Is it because we're old, we're uneducated, you don't think we know anything? So it was an agreement, but really not something that that the women had agreed on. So
you called the term comfort women a euphemism, which clearly it is, because it, you know, it's you said perhaps a more accurate term would be sex slaves. And these were women and girls who were kidnapped and forced to provide, well, who were raped by multiple soldiers. And I mean, that's basically what their lives were like during that time. And it's really horrible. And I'm wondering if that term comfort women itself is problematic. And was it problematic as you were entering into this book? Because I know you're all about language, and that comfort women, it just sounds so not what it was.
Right. Yeah, it is a very euphemistic term. You know, they weren't there to provide comfort, right? Like you said, they were forced into this labor. And, well, I use that term because I want to point that, the euphemistic quality of it, right? That this is the word that most people are familiar with if they know anything about their history.
Yeah.
But a lot of people might not realize that it's a euphemism.
Right.
You know, that they didn't actually use the term sex slaves, of course.
Right.
But it is something that most people are aware of if they have heard about their history. And I wanted to kind of bring attention to that in a way. So I do use the term, but hopefully in a way that questions it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, you know, I've heard of this before. I don't know how many people in the community, you know, in the general public have, but I've heard of it before, of course, and knew the stories, and but I had never really thought about the word itself until I read your book, and the words kind of made me mad.
Right. Yeah. And just the word comfort, you know, it's so vague, right?
Yeah. And it almost sounds like they did something nice, you know, they're going to comfort you. And in your author's note to this collection of poems, you were talking about hearing some of these women tell their stories, their testimony. And you said something I thought really struck me. You wrote, they were speaking from within, not for a community.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like an incredibly important distinction. Can you unpack that a bit, the difference between speaking from within and not for a community?
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of these former comfort women came forward with their own stories. And, you know, when a collection of testimonies come together, they're all seeking their own story, but they're pointing to this common violation that happened to their lives, their bodies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that really powerful that, you know, one woman came forward with her story publicly, and all these women began to come forward with their own stories. And they came together and now work as this documentary source, right, of this entire history.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's really powerful that, you know, they're not, like, you know, really speaking for anyone else, but they're coming forward to share what happened to them. And later they all collect to provide us with this horrible, horrific image of what really happened to them. And we can imagine what other things happened, right, to women who couldn't come forward with their stories. And I think their stories just, you know, obviously provide us with some images or stories, but then they also suggest, you know, what are the other stories that haven't been shown to us? They point to knowledge, but also gaps in our knowledge.
Right. You know, the interesting thing is, as I'm reading these poems, especially the testimonies, you have this book set in different parts. One part is called Testimonies, and it has the name of the woman, and then it has her testimony. The sense that I'm reading as I'm reading this book is that you, the poet, or I should say the poems themselves, seem to be speaking from within. And I'm wondering how much of a challenge that was to be able to pull that off and not to speak for, but to speak from within.
Right, the testimonies, poems, right?
Right.
And, yeah, I should be also clear that, you know, I didn't interview these women myself. These women have all passed away, the women in the testimonies, poem section. And so I called them from books. And it added another, you know, wrinkle to the question of ethics and my role in writing these poems and getting into them in the first place. And I felt really uncomfortable doing it, you know, writing these poems in their voices. And I think that I should continue to feel very uncomfortable about them.
Oh, wow. That's right? Beautiful.
As people should feel uncomfortable reading these, right? I mean, these poems are not intended so people go in and leave thinking, well, that was beautiful, you know. So the form is one way that I wanted to show that discomfort through the gaps in between phrases and sentences and just the stuttering quality, and just show that, you know, you might be reading, might be disturbed by this weird formal choice, but that should be reflective of how you should be uncomfortable reading these narratives in the first place. And perhaps maybe even suggest that I, as a person, you know, I don't feel like I'm presenting their whole history. So there are, you know, gaps in the words, and hopefully showing some kind of necessary distance that I put between myself and the women speaking.
Right. That's interesting. The gaps, those were partly expressed by the lines, how you broke the lines up.
Right.
Yeah, and that was fantastic. I love those beautifully written. And you said in an interview, I think it's Apogee, if I'm pronouncing it correct. Mm-hmm. But you said, when we write poetry, we are confronting that ugliness and pain and still making beauty. And that clearly what's going on here. And I'm wondering how that might have sometimes been a challenge, to write about something yet to be so beautiful in how you're writing about something so horrible.
Right. Yeah, I do feel like every poem reaches towards beauty, even if it's something about really horrific and really painful. And I don't mean to say a poem would, you know, demean or necessarily downplay those traumas, but that I think that's a gesture of hope sometimes, or a gesture that there is something powerful in preserving these stories and presenting them in such a way. You know, so I think poetry is so different from prose, obviously, in that the language might be like circumlocutory or just very metaphorical. And it might not cut to the core of the message or the story as directly as other forms of writing, but just everything that we say around it and just the very like spiralized way we get to it. I think that journey can be really beautiful too.
Yeah.
But also truthful at the same time. But yeah, like you said, that is a tension that I feel. And again, I think that is also a necessary tension.
Right.
Yeah.
And a question I often ask poets is what came first, the shape or the idea of the book, the theme of the book, or the poems? And so I want to ask you that question. At what point in the writing process of this book did you know what it was going to be about, or did you set out to write this book specifically?
Well, I didn't really think that my book would have a lot of poems about comfort women. To be honest, I really didn't have any idea what my manuscript as a whole is going to look like. I wrote a lot of these poems in the last year of my MFA program, and at that point I was just trying to write as many poems as possible, so I could have a manuscript. And it just happened that I kept writing these poems, that everything that I was writing became about their history, and then soon the Korean history in general, the Korean War, and I like to think that the Korean-American history is also, well, I'm not a Korean-American, but Korean-Canadian, Korean-American history is also part of Korean history.
Right, definitely.
So it became about, like, my immigrant experience and all of that. And, yeah, like, it's just strange how I look back and realize that I didn't have this clear overview of what my book was going to be, but systematically they all pull together.
I imagine there were times, or there were some poems that, as you were revising, just didn't fit into the manuscript, and so you still have those poems floating around?
Yeah, I do have a few, actually.
And you're a very young writer. This is your very first book, and I imagine in 20, 30 years after you've been writing a lot of books, and some poems that didn't make it in it, you're going to be able to go into your poetry archives and find a book that is written along the same themes, but throughout the years.
Yeah, hopefully.
I'm talking to Emily Jungmin Yoon about her new book, A Cruelty Special to Our Species, a book of poems, really beautiful poems. One poem that really struck me is called Easily Written Poem. And I love that poem, but the last lines just really struck me, and I want to read those. Silly girl, silly, silly girl, for thinking that writing line after line of beastly beatitudes will help her. How silly, 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 silly. That's such a beautiful poem. And can you tell me a little bit how this poem came about and how you ultimately decided it fit into this particular book.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that poem to attention. And yeah, this poem came about because I think this is a question that poets get asked a lot. What is poetry doing in these times? And that's kind of a weird burden to put on poets because I don't really see people asking that to other artists.
Right.
But there is always the question of proving the value of poetry. And it is something that I think about a lot as well, not because of those external forces, but also, oh gosh, what am I doing? You know, and I do identify mainly as a poet and then everything else. So I'm just like, what am I doing under this administration? This is all these terrible things happening every single day. And, you know, I don't really think, oh, you know, a poem can change the world, or I'm going to change everything with a single poem. Like, I don't put myself on a pedestal or even poetry on a pedestal as such. Although I do believe in the power of words.
Right.
And what poetry can do, what this literature can do, and how it's going to matter down the road too. Like, when people from the future look at it, they can understand what people of our time were thinking and how they were speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was thinking of all those things, and I remembered this poem that I read by Yoon Dong-joo, who's a Korean poet from the colonial period, and he has a poem called Easily Written Poem.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's basically on the same line of thought, him thinking, you know, he's going to university in Japan, and he's kind of contemplating his position in that specific context. You know, there are people who are actively out on the streets protesting, fighting for Korean independence, and he's just mulling over what the occupation of the poet means.
Mm-hmm.
So the poem that I wrote after him, the sentiment is similar and is inspired by him. The title is, of course, the same, but the language is all different.
Uh-huh.
And just I try to put that into my and the contemporary context.
Right. And the poet that, you know, Yoon Dong-joo, I know you're also a translator, that you translate Korean poems into English. Have you ever translated him?
Yeah, just for practice, really. I haven't translated a whole lot. And he is so widely canonized that
really?
He is one of the, in Korean literature. So he is one of the poets who's been translated more than a lot of others.
Mm.
But actually, I did translate a chapbook of poems by 9 Korean women poets.
Uh-huh.
And actually, that book is coming out in February.
Oh, great. Who's publishing that one?
It's coming out of Tilted Axis Press, the publisher based in the UK.
And will it have, is it a bilingual edition, Korean on one side and English on the other?
So the print version will just have the translation, but the e-version, I believe, will have both.
And how is translating poetry, how does that work with your poetry? How is the process different? And are they both creative processes? And I don't know, tell me about that, going from one to another.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I do think translation is deeply creative and something that requires a lot of imagination.
Uh-huh.
And not just because, you know, languages don't exactly transfer meaning from one to the other. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, like it requires imagination in that, might be a word in Korean, but not in English. How do I rephrase this?
Yeah.
But I kind of see translation as some kind of a revision process.
Oh, that's interesting. Right?
Not just for me, but, you know, when I'm translating something, you might have to tweak maybe the syntactical order or the order of, I guess, images in a way that makes sense in the other language.
Right.
Yeah, I don't mean like, you know, overhauled. I try to be, I try to remain as loyal to the original language as possible. And I hate to use the word loyal because it's
so Yeah, that's funny. You hate to use the word loyal, but you have to use it sometimes.
Yeah, I just can't think of a better word at this moment.
Right.
But for my own writing, I think translation is helpful because, you know, there are words or expressions that I use in Korean without really, you know, thinking about like its origins. You know, sometimes phrases are very metaphorical or imagistic. But when I'm translating, I realize, oh gosh, yeah, actually this is very beautiful.
Yeah.
And I try to use that for my own English language poetry.
Well, you know, if it's not enough, Emily, that you wrote an amazing book of poems, you're doing translations. If that's not enough, you're also getting a PhD in Korean literature at the University of Chicago. How do you do it all? What is a typical Emily day like? Do you wake up and write poetry, or do you wake up and do what you need to and then write poetry at night? What's your process?
Oh, gosh. I haven't written poetry for a while.
Oh, wow.
Because I find quite overwhelmed by just my academic obligations most of the time.
And so, you have to teach as part of that, right? You're teaching Intro to Korean?
Right, I've been TAing, and this winter quarter I'll be teaching fourth year Korean, which is kind of a literature reading class
that
is Korean. Yeah.
That's exciting.
it should be fun. It's my first time, but yeah. We'll see. And in spring, I'll be teaching a creative writing workshop.
Wow. And so you're already done with your coursework, I read, I think, in an interview somewhere, and you're preparing for your exams and your dissertation?
Yeah. So thank God I finished my exams in the summer, in June. So
congratulations.
I'm working on the proposal. Thank you.
Well, you know, we're running out of time, but I just wanted to say that the book is lovely. I mean, it's lovely. It's painful. The language is amazing. And there's this poem called Dream Devil. And I want to be the very first fiction writer to use the following quote as an epigram before a story or a novel. And that quote is, "A devil must occupy my dream, for who else would design my nightmares?"
Thank you. I'm so honored.
No, it's a beautiful line, and that's a beautiful poem. And I'm wondering if you would be willing to read one of these poems so we can all hear how, you know.
Yeah, I'll read Dream Devil.
Okay, good. I was hoping that would be a hint enough to read.
I've never read this out loud, actually.
Oh, that's perfect. Excellent.
So this is perfect. Dream Devil. A devil must occupy my dream. For who else would design my nightmares, though they are not truly mine? I cannot control their cities, nor their rivers full of bodies. I clutch your hair like a drowning person reaching for floating straw. Maybe it's you. You keep me from rest. When I speak Korean with my mother on the phone, my native tongue is a code, you a secret. Still, you form your body around me so close that my dream occupies your dream. I navigate your sleep. What you contain is mine. Your sick cats I resurrect as black lions, your tormentors underwater. I summon bodies and bodies of water, and you walk around them in circles. Like this, we grow old together without you seeing me. But morning comes as suddenly and surely as any morning. You are here, beside me, 50 years younger. Dear God, I have missed you. I wait for you to wake.
That was Emily Jungmin Yoon reading from her poem Dream Devil from her new book of poems, A Cruelty Special to Our Species. A devil must occupy my dream, for who else would design my nightmares? Emily, an angel must occupy your tongue, for who else could design such beautiful songs?
Thank you.
When are you going to get back to writing poetry, and what's next for Emily Jungmin Yoon?
Yeah, well, I said I haven't been writing, but you know, I'm reading a lot and editing a lot and thinking, you know, that is part of writing.
Absolutely.
I'm hopeful. And, you know, I don't know when the next collection will come out. I guess no writer can tell you really that.
And that's really key of me to ask anyway, because this just came out, and let's linger in this one before we start thinking about the next one.
Oh, no, it's not key, but you know, hopefully not like 30 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I remember when my first book came out, my dad a month later asked me, "When's the next book coming out?" Like, come on, Dad. So I'm sorry if I sounded that way. I think it's a beautiful book, and I think this it's in hardback right now, which is a testament to how much your editors believe in this book. Because we still have the paperback to look forward to in a year or so.
Yes. paperback will be here soon.
Okay. Emily, thank you so much for joining us on Words on a Wire. And I hope everybody reads this book. It's important and it's beautiful.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure talking to you.
I'd like to thank Emily Yoon for joining us on Words on a Wire. The poems are called A Cruelty Special to Our Species. Make sure you check it out. They're beautiful poems. I'm Daniel Chacon. I'd like to thank you for joining us. I'd like to thank our producer, Stefania Castro, and pick up a book and read it. See you next week.